Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, I'm back and I'm feeling great. It's Tiffany.
And it's Mandy. Hey, guys.
And this is
Brown Ambition.
Yes, look at us all professional.
I got the results of my DNA test that I sent to 23andMe.
No, you're like a thousand things.
No, my husband said we might have to change the name of the show to Beige Ambition.
Why?
It turns out I'm 54% European and 43% sub-Saharan African. I'm only 43% black.
Really? Like, so what? So your father, like, because obviously, like,
it's so funny. I mean, I guess that means maybe my dad, had a little bit of European. Who knows? It was interesting. I mean, there was nothing too shocking. That was just really hilarious.
Yeah. Also, sub-Saharan African. That's like what, Ethiopia? Like, what's that?
Oh, actually, did I say sub-Saharan? Sorry, I meant Western Africa. I'm a little bit sub-Saharan. It was the same thing. You know, I shared my dad's results a little while ago. He was, he did Ancestry.com. I did 23andMe. Mm-hmm. And his results were all the main Ghana, Nigeria, all those West African countries. And I basically had the same. Yeah, I'm way more British and Irish than I thought. I mean, I guess that makes sense. I knew my mom's side came from Ireland. I didn't know all the British side too, but interesting.
Did your dad, when he did his, did any like European things pop up, even in the smallest?
I should go back and look now and see. Because I didn't even look that hard at my dad's results. I just looked at, you know, like where in Africa my people came from. But yeah, 39.8% West African I am, and 2.5%, whatever broadly sub-Saharan Africa means. I don't know. That's the other 2%.
Well, if I can speak for the black delegation, we certainly would love for you to maintain your membership. There are things you're going to have to – every year you will have to renew. You're going to have to watch Good Times.
I got to pay.
You're going to
have to pay the extra dues.
Yes, the extra dues. You're going to have to wear your curly hair at least, I would say, 1 or 2 months out of the year.
Are you kidding me? I haven't straightened this hair in 2 years.
Like, exactly. This is why we're allowing you to maintain your membership.
It's a mess. You know? No, for real, my hair has turned into like a chia pet gone wrong.
Really? But I love your hair.
I know, but like it's bad. It's like an overgrown hedge right now, and I keep trying to trim it. I keep saying like, oh, I can just trim my own hair. And I mean, I call it a hedge. I'm just making fun of my hair because it's just, you know, I really do trim it like a hedge. I just snip, 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 like around till it's shaped roughly like evenly. But I haven't been to a real salon in 2 years now. So I need an actual haircut. I'm like, because I turn around and there are long strands of curly hair that are way longer than the rest. It's looking a little ratchet. Like, you know, I saw my 19-year-old cousin yesterday and she was like, it don't look right.
Like, you know, once the kids start telling you, you're like, you know what?
That was my real rude awakening. I was like, oh, yeah, I can't deny
it. Once the teens start saying stuff, you're like, you know what? Let me adjust.
She just said, it doesn't look right.
So I had my 2 week update with the doctor. Everything is great. I told her my plans of trying to have twins. And she was like, I want you to try naturally first. There's some tests you can take apparently where they like squirt dye inside you and they kind of follow the path of the way an egg would go. Oh, and fun. She was like, Yeah, I know. She's like, it's kind of unpleasant, so take Motrin ahead of time. I'm like, great. But basically, it'll show to make sure that my tubes and everything are flowing fully, which she said she suspects they are, and she doesn't want me to go through IVF. She really wants me to do natural first. And I'm like, but what if I want twins? She's like, the female body is really meant to carry one baby at a time, although it does happen that people carry two, but that's not really what the uterus is for. And I'm like, so now I'm torn. So I'm definitely open to Brown Ambition feedback.
She said, don't get those babies in bulk.
I know. Well, she said that, you know, it's not me. She's like, obviously people do it, but she's just like, well, I would prefer. Now, if I was like 30, I would definitely be like, sure, girl. But I'm 38. And so I guess I'm a little nervous that what if like I can't, like, I really would like my baby to have a sister or a brother. And I'm nervous. I mean, Supergirl is obviously going to be her sister, but Supergirl is already 11. And I'm like, you know, like a playmate. So like, cause I know what it was like growing up with like somebody in my age range, you know?
Yeah. And well, so- I mean, you can only plan so much. And what I would say is, you know, you're going to have what you're going to have. And you know, you have friends who have kids and like,
yeah, I have a niece and a nephew. So I just said, well, at the very least, I'm at least going to do the test to see if, cause she was like, if you flow freely, then you can decide after that. So my mom told me she was going to say, my mom is all for it. Go get your twins, girl. But that's because every grandma, potential grandma, is always like, more the merrier, the more the merrier. So, but she told me, she's like, your doctor's going to tell you you shouldn't, but it's not like you can't. So I'm going to just gather as much information as I can and make the best decision possible. Superman is getting nervous now because he's like, I can't raise these babies on my own. I'm like, you are so dramatic. He's worried that like something would happen to me in like childbirth. I'm like, oh my God, please don't, let's not go that far just yet.
Well, I mean, that's a sweet inclination. Yeah. I mean, did you see, actually that reminds me, on a sad note, there was this, this guy on Instagram is going viral because he's been posting about he lost his wife in childbirth. It's amazing to think that still happens in like 2018.
I know, right?
In America. Yeah. So he lost his wife, and it's just like this video of him dancing with his newborn, and like the internet is just eating. I mean, not eating it up. That sounds like cheap, but yeah. Just it's so sad.
I think I did like, see that. Oh.
He's like sharing his pain. It's the most. It's what social media. It's when I like social media for once. I'm like, okay, someone's sharing something real, but it's just so sad. Like he's really working through the grief in the public eye.
And it's probably therapeutic for him.
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely. I feel like he's probably getting a lot of support. And yeah, it must be really hard. But someone did. We did get an email from someone who reached out and just wanted to check on you after your surgery.
Oh, thanks. A lot of people have hit me up on social. Just thank you guys. Honestly, I feel really like last week was like kind of like the last week where I was like, oh, my stitches. I mean, it's deceptive because you want to be careful. But I have to say, I feel like 85, maybe even I would say 85% myself, like. I'm sleeping normally, you know, I'm not carrying anything heavy or anything like that, but I'm not in pain at all. Sometimes I feel a little tightness down there just to remind me like, slow down. But other than that, I feel good. I'm back to quote unquote work, you know, as far as meanings back to sitting at my computer. I'm not going to lie. It's been hard to jumpstart because I literally took off like a week and a half and I'm like, all right, Tiffany, come on, Tiffany, come on, you know, but yeah, you guys have reached out to me on social and just hit me up in the inbox. And I just want to say thank you. You know, it's what's so crazy is how many women are like, I had the surgery or I have fibroids. And somebody hit me that I thought was great. She was like, thank you so much for talking about how your insurance covered it. I didn't know that. She's like, I checked and my insurance covers my surgery. I'm getting mine too. And I was like, yes, that's awesome.
Yikes. Oh, relationship. That just reminds me, tomorrow is Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day, everybody listening.
Right. And if you're with somebody who's called it Valentine's Day, break up with them. No.
With an M. Oh, God. Man, someone misspelled definitely today, and I just got the shivers. I was like, oh, there's no A in that word.
That's like Pacific and specific.
Oh, Lord. We can go.
I know. We're like, oh, let's not do that. Meanwhile, I'm the worst. Like, I don't even judge because when, like, in my head, I type correctly, but then I reread some of my Facebook statuses. And I'm like, so there's no spell check anywhere on your computer, Tiffany, because this is horrendous. I'm just not a good like typer, although in my head I know the right things to say.
That's okay. We forgive you.
Are you guys going to do anything? I told Superman, like, I don't care.
It's a nice excuse to actually, it's a nice excuse to do something nice if you want to, but I don't feel pressure. We're in the middle of this house process, so we're both just like a bundle of nerves. So we are going to see Black Panther on Friday.
Ooh.
Not technically a Valentine's Day date, but I'm excited. It looks really good. I got these tickets like a month ago.
It does look, honestly, everyone keeps saying, I have not seen one negative review, which is like unheard of.
Yeah, the soundtrack is amazing. Kendrick Lamar did the soundtrack. It is like the blackest. I mean, first of all, like to have the first, this is the first all black superhero movie, right? Or like primarily black, right? I can't think of another one. Maybe that one on Netflix with Luther or whatever it is. But this is like a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And I just love that they are doing the most with it and really embracing it. And they got Ryan Coogler to direct. Like did he direct Fruitvale Station and Rocky?
I don't know. I'm not a good director.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that's right. And they got Kendrick Lamar to do the soundtrack. Like, you know, I don't know. It's amazing.
It's black on black on black.
Blackity black, black, black.
All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost worked there a couple of times because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access, wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
Are you ready for some brown break, brown boost?
Always.
Well, I am going to take a brown break from the people who are going a little bit too hard against these new presidential, the first lady and President Barack Obama, their new official portraits.
Oh, Lord.
I'm not going to lie. I endorse this break. Yes. Like, so when I first saw, I'm very familiar with portraits, because I don't want to say their names wrong, because especially since the young man who painted it is Nigerian.
Was it a young man? Because I've only seen the woman who painted Michelle. So two separate artists did the portraits.
Yep. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like Kayinde. Let me see.
But they selected them personally, right?
Yeah. So okay. and the portraits are honestly the portraits are perfect representations of like their work. You know what I mean? Mm. And so it's like, okay, it's Kayinde Wiley. I believe he's Nigerian. At least I think he's West African. So, and then Amy Sherald, who's from Detroit. So Kayinde Wiley, like,
people are already messing with this one of Obama. Cause you know, he's in like the bushes. It's beautiful. Yeah. They put like Sean Spicer creeping out from behind the bushes. All right. Sorry. Continue.
But people are going so hard. And I'm like, so most people like President Obama's his portrait. But I mean, and some people don't. But that's, if you look at Kayinde's stuff, it's larger than life. I've seen it at the Brooklyn Museum. It's beautiful. And like his stuff always has his background like this. So it's not a huge surprise. They clearly knew. It wasn't like, oh, my God, I've never seen it before. Like, you know, anybody who's an artist knows that you do a sketch and then a color sketch. There's all of these processes that go along. So these weren't unveiled like, oh, my God, what is this? And then Amy Sherald, that's the one that people are having the biggest pushback with, because so she is the first lady is kind of gray toned, which is typical of her paintings. And then but her dress has a lot of meaning. That there's different, it's kente cloth, and kente cloth was meant to give different messages, like different patterns that you wove into kente cloth would give different messages, so that way slaves could communicate with each other without their masters knowing. She embedded all that in there. And so when I first saw the first ladies, I wasn't in love, I will be honest, but it's definitely grown on me, especially as I've looked up this woman's her work, and I'm like, you know, it's grown on me. But people are really like, I mean, this is historic. This is two Black artists drawing the first Black president and his first lady, who is also African American, and they're Black artists, and this stuff was going to live in history forever and ever. I don't know if you've seen the lineup of like the last 10 presidents, their portraits. It's like gray and brown and Black tones. They're all beautiful. And then all of a sudden, boom, President Obama's portrait, which is like beautifully lush and green and full of life. Mm-hmm. And they will go down in history. And you cannot like the art itself because it's super subjective, but people are like just dragging almost like the artist, which I'm just like, really? Like, I'm just over it. Like, I get it. You don't like it. Honestly, I don't care.
I think people are too quick to judge. I mean, if you ever go to, first of all, I think seeing a little tiny image on your computer or your phone is not the same thing as being in front of this massive work of art. And if you've ever gone to a museum, the whole point of those benches in a museum is to sit with it and to look at it and let it wash over you.
Yeah.
And some art isn't necessarily as easy to digest as others because it challenges you, because it doesn't look easy and palatable. And I'm not, this is not to shade the man who did Obama's portrait, because it's beautiful and lush, and I think that's maybe a little bit more appealing just because the colors used, they're just easy to digest, and they're so clearly vibrant. And Michelle's is quieter. I mean, I think that you just have to give it a chance. It's regal. It's elegant. To me, it's like, it's almost like a black and white image with a little bit of saturation added. And I just think I loved it, and I don't see anything, like, I just think people are just, first of all, I think it's a great headline. Michelle Obama's portrait doesn't look anything like her. I mean, whether it's a magazine cover or, you know, an Instagram post, Michelle Obama's appearance from the second, you know, they hit the national stage has been like picked apart. And to me, it's kind of sad, but not surprising that the same is happening with this, you know, this work of art made in her image.
And like you said, art doesn't have to look like a photograph. Like, it's not.
It's an interpretation. The only person who really knows it is the artist and whoever's looking at it. You know, what does it say to you?
Exactly. And from what I understand, you know, First Lady Michelle Obama, she picked the artist, like seeing some of her work, like this is indicative of her work, like gray tones for the skin. Like, it looks like her work. I mean, some of her work is a little bit more colorful, but the skin of all of her people are always this color. So I'm just like, and people are like putting brown on it, talking about, I fixed it. And I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, that is that's the worst insult. That's the worst insult to her. I'm sad.
You know what? Yeah, it does make, because I know what it is to like, and I think we all know what it is to put your heart and soul into something. And then the reception, it's one thing, like, you don't have to like everything I do, but then the reception to be, you know, just levels of disrespect that's just unnecessary. Like, I fixed it. Like, girl, this is like my life's work. Like, to be able to work with, you know, the first Black president and his wife, and for my things to sit in the Smithsonian as a Black artist. Do you even know what that means? For you to say, I fixed it, or I just, like I said, you don't have to like it, but I think we live in, the social media age has made everybody think that disrespect is cute.
Yeah.
And funny. It's like, we're all bad 3-year-olds. You know, like the 3-year-old that's like, listen, Linda, listen. Remember that video with that little boy was telling his mother off?
I still quote that video to this day.
Listen, listen, listen. Okay, listen, 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 Linda. Like, we all are like bad 3-year-olds getting like high fives for being like disrespectful and unruly. But they're like, oh, but it's so funny. Like, okay, until you grow up and you see people in person and you wouldn't say it to my face though.
Yeah, everyone wants the funny hot take, the most retweets. But this is going to stand through history. Tweets don't, you know, tweets are nothing. This is going to, you know, decades from now, kids are going to be passing this portrait and they won't think anything of it.
Exactly. So that is my brown break from the negativity about the portraits. Whether you like it or not, they're here to stay. And I'm proud of the two artists.
Absolutely. Oh, I just find anything with their faces on it comforting.
Yes.
I'm going to buy some Michelle Obama socks or something. Just so I want to do a brown boost this week. I actually was hanging out with a couple of friends, a couple of weekends ago, and I meant to do this boost last week, but the whole house thing took over. So I need to do a boost for Sesame Street, the wokest show in the world right now. Cause I happened to stay over at their house and they have a young daughter. She's a year and a half and she loves Sesame Street, and it was Sunday morning. And I guess a new hot Sesame Street episode drops on HBO every Sunday at like 9 a.m. I didn't know it, but I found out. And so we were all watching it, and it was this, it was the cutest little episode. It was about, it was one Muppet with curly natural hair and two poofs on either side, like the same way I wore my hair. And a lot of black girls wear their hair when they're little kids, and sometimes still now. And then a little Muppet with like blonde hair, and they were dancing, and the blonde hair girl, it was all about teaching about self-love and how different hair textures are beautiful. But they told the story like for children, you know, the way that they did it is the girl with the blonde hair was like whipping her hair back and forth. And she was like, whip your hair. And the other girl's like, well, my hair doesn't whip like that. We can't dance together. And then the story ending was like, we can dance together. Your hair, I think her hair bounced and her hair bounced and the other girl's hair whipped. And they made like a dance about, you know, hair that bounces versus and hair that whips. And I just thought it was so cute. And I was
look
at Sesame Street. Like, this is amazing. You can just tell they are really, like, whoever's writing this show. Like, you don't think about children's television, but, and how important it is, you know, but I don't know. I just loved it. And to see their little brown baby watching them made me so happy.
Oh, I love that. Honestly, Sesame Place, right? Or Sesame Street? Sesame Street, I think it's Sesame Street, right?
I mean, it was when I was a kid. Maybe it changed. Now it's on HBO. I don't know.
No, I think it is Sesame Street. I think Sesame Place is like the actual, like there's a physical like location where, like an amusement park. But yeah, Sesame Street is the best.
I had no idea. Kids today, they get it all.
Do we have any good questions?
We do. I was saving this one from last week. Let me go find it real quick.
And I just want to say yes, iTunes, for that Black History Month.
Stole my win, didn't you?
Oh, my bad.
Reached out and snatched it.
We're going to save it. Never mind. Rewind. So, do we have any questions this week?
No, it's fine.
Sidebar, my friend Libya Jones, I posted like about Black Ambition on my Facebook page. She was like, oh my God, tell your co-host Mandy, she's got a great voice. I was like, ooh, wow. I will.
Thank you. You think so?
Oh, I can't laugh too hard still.
Oh, really? Sorry. Thank you. I will tell my siblings who constantly told me how annoying it was when I talked all the time as a kid. So yeah, we have a good question. And you guys, thanks for sending. We got quite a few questions this week, but I have to go back to this one from last week. But just as a reminder, you know, you can go to brownambitionpodcast.com to drop us a question. Just click on Ask Us Anything, or you can hit us up directly via email at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. Boop, boop. All right. So this question, I thought it was funny. This is from Jamisha. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Jamisha or Jamisha. She says, is there a harm to getting rental cars for other people? My two brothers are constantly asking me to rent cars for them. I always say no because I don't want my name attached to it. And if anything happens, it could fall on me, correct? I told them I don't want to lend out my name, and they're insisting that I'm not. And if they're insisting that blah, 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 and try to guilt me, saying you never want to help me, blah, blah, blah. What do you guys think? Am I being too harsh? They have their own cars, but they're always selling them for some reason or another, and in between, they drive rentals. So,
that's such a young guy thing, right? I feel like. Get the car, sell it, right?
Get the car, sell it. It's probably they're leasing it, and their leases are up, and then they're like renting in between or something like that. I don't know. That sounds – something shady is happening. I think your spidey senses are correct, Jamisha. I would say no in a heartbeat too. But I actually just had this happen. My baby cousin who told me my hair ain't right. I'm going to put her business out there. So she's 19 and she's lived, you know, having seen her grow up from I used to live with my between college and getting a grown adult job, I lived with my uncle in his basement for like 2 months, and I lived with my baby cousins, and I, you know, in the same house with them. They were 12 and 6, and Anna was a 12-year-old. So I've seen them grow up, and they, you know, their parents took were always there for them. Whatever they wanted, they had it, you know. Lived like a but a very loving, like supported kind of household. Never had to, you know, never wanted for anything, like solid middle class. And now Anna Banana, as I call her, is in college, and she wants to get her first apartment. You know, she's working the job, she's got the school going on, but they require a co-signer, and her dad, for whatever reason, doesn't want to co-sign. So I get this like frantic text from her: Mandy, I need a co-signer, please co-sign my apartment. And I'm like, and this is the first time, but I'm like, this is my baby. Like, I love Anna I would do anything for her, but I had to check myself because I was reaching for the pen, and I'm like, what would you tell a Brown Ambition listener, Mandy? Don't do it. Like, don't do it. And I feel like this is what happens when like your siblings or someone comes to you and they give you those big puppy dog eyes and ask for something like this.
And honestly, the truth is, you might not even be able to. So I'm on Enterprise's site, and Enterprise is a major car rental company, and they have on their FAQs, can I pay for a rental of a car for another individual? And it says that the renter of the vehicle must be present to sign the rental agreement and provide their credit card at the time of pickup. The renter cannot provide a credit card or debit card belonging to someone else. And if you wish to pay for a rental car but have someone else drive it, you can rent the vehicle in your name and add them as an additional driver. That is possible.
Yep.
And in order to add an additional driver, the driver would have to meet all of their additional driver requirements, and you just have to figure out what that is. So you can, but you have to add, my worry is that what requirements are they not? Are they just looking for your financial support, or are there some requirements that they're not able to reach, you know? And so I would just be nervous, because if something happens, you know, that's your name and your, you know, potentially your money. And so the answer would be, like, if my sister asked me to rent a car, it's hard when it's like your, you know, your baby sister or brother.
A judgment call based on what you know about them.
Yes, I was gonna say that, like, if baby Lisa asked me, the answer is no. I love baby Lisa. Sorry, Lee, but now if my sister Tracy asked me, who's 2 years younger, she's super responsible. And let's just say she's like, I just need it for a week because my car's in the shop, blah, blah, blah. I might say yes, because Tracy is the most responsible, well, out of all of my sisters. You know, although it's not the best idea, just based upon her history, I might say yes. So,
Might be. What if they're under 25?
Ooh, well, then if they're under 25, then you would want to, and that's what I was thinking. That's what it sounded like. Still, you'd want to add them on as an additional driver, and you'd want to make sure that they could legally drive that car, because they would have to still meet whatever requirements are required as an additional driver. So you'd have to figure that out.
You probably still have to show the rental agency their driver's license. Mm-hmm. You're going to add them, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because I hope what they're not trying to do is get you to rent it as if you're driving it and they're going to drive it. Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, because you can get in even more trouble for that.
Well, super trouble.
Super, super trouble. Right. Yeah, Jamisha, I'm going to back you up on this one. Hold your ground. Don't let your shady brothers use your name. Yes. First of all, this requires you going down to the rental agency, taking time out of your day. I mean, this is a lot of trouble for you. They need to get their act together.
And exactly.
I'm kind of talking to myself and trying to like build my, because I still kind of feel bad for saying no, but to baby Anna. But I'm in the middle of the mortgage process. I can't be co-signing, you know, an apartment. And also, I mean, if anyone, have you ever been asked by like a sibling or like a cousin or some or friend to co-sign?
Thank goodness, no, not as yet. Because I literally remember that when I was in high school, my dad sitting my sisters and I and all down, forbidding us to co-sign for each other or to ask each other to co-sign and telling us why. Like, we had real money lessons. And so, like, that's never, and I don't have any cousins my age, like our age range. So it was mostly like us growing up together. And so we've never asked each other to co-sign, because we kind of grew up with that lesson of like, my dad's like, don't ask me and don't ask your sisters. The answer is no. If you want to give your sister money, or if you want to lend her money, that's another thing. But to co-sign your name, don't ever do that.
And I wish everyone had your dad to like give them the talk. I should actually just talk to Anna and explain to her more reasons what co-signing means and like why, you know, why I was hesitant and why she should find other ways to get that apartment. I think you can put down a bigger deposit, or something like that, or just plead your case. Cause I don't know, but that just kind of goes back to, I feel like growing up sort of always kind of getting what you want the first time, you know, that first time when you're like a teenager and you don't get something that you want, like a teenager trying to be an adult.
Yes.
You're like, what do you mean? I can't do this thing, but I had an idea. I was going to like, you know, have my own apartment. It's hard for me, but I want her to feel that frustration and then find a solution on her own.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good. But like you said, it's a great teachable moment.
Definitely. Well, thanks for your question, Jamisha. And good luck with them brothers.
Yeah. Woo, child. Do you want to take another question?
We could. If you give me a second, I'll find another one.
All right. In the meantime, I'll keep you guys company. So, hey, come here often. Oh, I'm so happy it's not been a terrible winter in the Northeast. I mean, we've had a little snow, a little cold, but it has not been. We have definitely had way worse winters. And so I'm glad that, although the flu season has been at its worst. I'm
just talking about the weather. Everyone's like,
stay with me now. Stay with me.
I have another question.
Yes. I was like, I'm going to start singing in a minute.
I had to save you. So this question is from listener Juana. She says, I was wondering if you guys can talk about paying a car or mortgage off sooner. Is it possible to double up on payments each year? Thank you for your time, Juana.
Juana. Oh, you want to pay it off? I know you probably hear that a lot. Sorry.
What?
No, I was saying Juana. I was using her name like, you want to pay it off early, huh? Oh. But I'm sure people use her name Juana like that all the time.
Super clever.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure she's like super original.
Good question. I was actually just asking myself this. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, go ahead. This is good for you.
My babe. Because I was, because, you know, we're getting a mortgage for this house and I was looking at the amortization schedule. I had to practice saying that. Amortization schedule. And this is basically, if you've heard of this phrase before with a mortgage, this is the schedule of how much of your payments will go toward your principal, which is your actual loan balance, versus the interest that you're paying on your loan balance over time. And I looked up, I just, you know, did, there's like amortization calculators on the internet that you can use and you can put in your loan amount. And it can give you an example of what your schedule might be. And I was astounded because banks set it up. Maybe this isn't news to everybody, but it was like news to me to see this, that how much of your first mortgage payments, like for the first 5 years, go toward interest. Oh my God. Yes. I'm like, I'm going to pay how much money in interest and how little. I think it was, I don't even remember. It was like, it was over $100,000 in interest and less than less than $50,000 in principal payments in the first 5 years. I was like, oh, hell nah. So naturally I'm like, how do I avoid this? And you can make additional principal payments on your mortgage. There's typically, I haven't gotten my first mortgage bill yet, but I've read that there's typically a box you can check when you're paying your bill online, or even, I don't even know if people mail checks anymore, but online, you should be able to say, I want to make an additional principal payment and make sure you check that box and submit a payment toward your principal whenever you want. I think there's no, unless your mortgage loan has some sort of prepayment penalty, which is a thing lenders can do, penalize you for paying your loan off early, which is shiesty to the ninth degree, nth degree. So just keep that in mind. But yeah, you can totally pay your, make additional payments toward your loan, and you don't have to do it just once a year. I think she said doubling up on payments once a year. No, you can double up once a month. You can take an extra $50 that you get from, you know, doing something like getting a rebate or something and put it toward your mortgage. And I'm thinking, I'm like already strategizing, how can I beat this I amortization schedule? Cause nah, like how are like, you nah, do son, that?
I can't go out like that. No, it's true. just be more mindful. So Mandy said everything that I would say. I want you to just be more mindful, because she said car and home, that you're more likely to find, if you're financing a car, you're more likely to find that, they have that prepayment, that you're not able to make a prepayment. Because I've seen a lot of people not really read their, finance, contract when they finance a car. So just be really careful about that. Like homes, these days they typically don't have that, but obviously you want to ask that question. Like, well, am I able to prepay this mortgage? And the car, the best thing to do, truthfully, is to bring your own financing from like your own bank or even better, a credit union. So you know everything. And you're like, no, I actually came with my own. You don't have to worry about that. I think, did you see that more and more, I don't know if you've seen this, since this is in alignment with home buying, like I've been seeing more and more videos, like the guy from Shark Tank said this, another guy said this, that they're really telling people not to buy homes.
What do you mean? Like on the...
So just saying, like, I was watching the guy, I don't remember his name, but the bald guy from Shark Tank was like, unless you're married with kids, he does not suggest you buy a home. And his name is Kevin, I think his name is.
Oh, the guy from FUBU?
No.
Mr. Wonderful. Mr. Wonderful. Yeah. Like, the old guy.
Yeah, the old guy.
Yeah.
And so poor him. He's like some probably multi-billionaire, millionaire, made all these great moves. And we're like, he's relegated to the old guy on Shark Tank. he was saying that, but that's not the first time. Like, I've been seeing it more and more pop up as I read, like, I like to read, like, a lot of, like, financial, like, articles and magazines and stuff. And really, they've been talking about, and even now with the new tax plan, how, that your standard deductions are going to actually outpace what you'd get if you were to itemize your income tax. Not your income tax, your mortgage tax.
And mortgage interest, your property taxes.
Yes. Oh, thank both. You. I'm like, yeah. Come on, Tiffany, bring it on now.
I'm here. I'm with the layup. I got you. take this across the finish line.
And so I'm just like, wow. So it's a weird not buy house movement that seems to be brewing. And I don't necessarily, to me, there's benefits obviously to both, but I'm just wondering why that's happening, why people are telling you not to buy a home and that renting is better unless you have like a family.
Yeah. I've actually been, cause I started, so it's funny, not funny, but I started covering personal finance as a journalist in 2010, right at the economy was kind of like falling apart, and the housing crisis obviously had already happened and was dragging people down, you know, for years to come after that. And at the time, there was this huge movement, you know, the idea of the American dream being get a house, you know, with the backyard and the picket fence and all that kind of stuff. There were, you know, a ton of articles being written back then about how that dream has been destroyed by this housing crisis. And ever since then, one of the most common headlines I've written and seen in personal finance news is buy versus rent. When does it make sense? When does it not make sense? Mm-hmm. And I think, and also among millennials, the idea of buying a house, this is why I struggled with it for so long. And, you know, I really resisted my husband who wanted to buy a house. I kept saying, why throw all this money into a house that could any day now be worth nothing? Why do that to ourselves? And also renting is, you know, so much more freeing. Like, we don't have to worry about maintenance or, that's actually just it, maintenance. Pipes that are bursting and all the responsibilities that go with home ownership. Like, I've definitely heard this argument. And I think what's making it, maybe a little bit more common now is the fact that we are in a very, like, the market is going up. I mean, not just going up, but the housing market is insane. The supply of housing, the supply of houses is so not keeping pace with demand that that's why housing values are just going insanely high right now. Like in Atlanta, for example, Atlanta is one of these cities, you know, we just did a study of competitive housing markets, and Atlanta is one of those cities I've been looking at. My brother just bought there, where I'm wondering, is there like a mini housing bubble happening in Atlanta and these other cities where people are just like rushing to buy houses and it's driving up prices because there's not enough inventory. And I actually asked my buddy Tendai, our chief economist, about this, and he explained the reason sort of why we have this lack of supply and why that's driving housing prices so high. And he explained, and it makes a lot of sense. So, you know, leading up to the recession, You saw a ton of people building developments and speculating and buying up homes and buying up lots of land to build houses on, you know, all these developers, all these construction companies building these developments. And then the housing crash happened and there was all these empty houses, never sold. People lost jillions of dollars. And so there was this fear around the same thing happening again. So people weren't building as many homes. And so there just isn't naturally enough homes now to meet demand in every city. Some cities, it's not that bad. Some cities, it's way worse. New York City is ridiculous right now.
Ridiculous, yeah.
So there's this artificial price increase that's happening just because of natural supply versus demand.
Okay.
And actually, my financial planner, when we talked to her last week, I needed like someone to tell me that I was not making an insane choice because I was worried about it too. You know, it is a hot market. And I was looking at, I mean, if you go to Zillow or Trulia or Realtor.com and you can look at housing values in your neighborhood over the last, you know, 10 years and across the board, what I've seen is this very big dip around 2008 to 2012 and then this huge incline since then. And I was like, damn, I wish I could have bought during the dip.
The dip, yeah. I felt like that, yep. When I was stalking like Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com, I remember looking like, oh man, I could have got the same house for like $70,000 less as I was looking.
But at the end of the – so one of the things that I did with my planner, and I'm glad she asked that, what she said is, you know, I think you guys are thinking about this. You know, you have a healthy size down payment. I think you're thinking things through, but I am concerned because you're buying at the height of the market. And together we looked at housing values where we're – the county where we're buying, specifically the county where we're buying. And the house that we're getting is $100,000. I don't know what percentage it is. Lower, less – the sales price is about $100,000 less than the average sales price of a comparable home in this county.
Okay, good.
And like I said, I got very fortunate. I'm just explaining my thought process because I think, you know, I think everyone's situation is different. But here's why I thought it was a good deal for us. One, it's right place for us, for our commute and our lifestyles. Two, we're getting it because the couple who's selling the house are really eager to retire, very eager to sell. We were fortunate to even find this house on a whim by checking the Zillow app. And they slashed the price because of how eager they are. So we're getting it under market value.
Yeah, good.
Significantly under market value.
Good.
And I actually went back and I looked at where the housing prices in this neighborhood were at the bottom of the market in 2012. That's when the bottom was for the county we're purchasing in. And the house is only slightly more than it was. Than the average or the median, whatever it is, sales price of a comparable home in 2012. And I recommend if you're thinking about buying and you want to know, is this market, is this a bubble? I would go back and see, you know, definitely look at the comps. You know, you might hear that if you like watch any HGTV shows, but like see what a comparable house, meaning like single family, how many bedrooms, how many baths in the same zip code, same city or whatever, town, county, is selling for. And then you might get a better idea if you're really buying the tip of a potential bubble or whatever. And that's
the key is you want to like Mandy and I are buying in, we're thinking like investors. And so even though we're going to live in these homes, you still want to think of your house as an investment. And so like, I'm so glad that I got outbid on the other homes because honestly, they were the homes that I didn't get were really super inflated because they would be listed for 200, maybe 220,000 and then go for 260, 280 2 weeks later. And so if I would have gotten one of those homes, who knows if once the housing market settled down in Newark, if I overpaid, whereas now with this house that we're getting, because it's a foreclosure and the house and the comparable houses in the neighborhood are worth 360. This house is worth 366 in its current state. Me getting it for 180 guarantees, like, I mean, it would have to drop so significantly in order for this not to be a good deal. Even with us going to put, like, we're going to put maybe like up to $50,000 worth of work into the house to get like the bathroom and the kitchen that I want. And so even with that, we still come out on top. So if you're buying a home to live in, to still think about it as an investment like, you know, like Mandy said, she did her due diligence to say, okay, despite us buying, like during a time when we're at the top of the housing market, this house is still a good buy.
Yep. And you know, investment, not in the sense that, oh, this is going to be my nest egg 1 year. You know, I feel bad for the couple because this really, you can tell this is their nest egg. You know, they bought this house in 79 for $45,000. You know, they made a ton of money, but this is their retirement. And I understand why they want to sell now. It's a great seller's market. You know, there's tons of buyers. But I'm not thinking that way. I really do. I just want to not lose money on this house. Dear God, I don't want to lose a lot of money in this house.
You're not gonna.
But it's also, you know, another thing is, you know, I don't know if, well, you paid for your house in cash. Most people use a mortgage, and the mortgage lender, I felt like I was interviewing 3 different lenders to see what they had on offer. And they'd be like, oh, well, you can qualify for way more than this. Don't you worry. Like, we can get you up to this. And I'm like, no. Here's what I want. I don't want that. I want half of that. This is how much I need a loan for, because I do not want my expenses to be any higher than they are right now as I'm renting. Yeah. And that's been my goal. And I'm so far, I mean, I really had to put a ceiling on my own budget. And with my budget, we really weren't supposed to be able to get a house. It's only because we got this deal. We happened to see this, you know, this house right when it sort of hit the market that we were able to get it. And thank God they like us enough. I mean, who knows, knock on a million pieces of wood, because we're still in contract.
I know.
Anybody can come and outbid us. You know, anybody could, you know. I'm going to knock on all the wood. All of it. But, you know, I think that's, you know, if you're thinking about buying, definitely don't get caught up in the emotion of it, or the, oh, Mandy and Tiffany are buying a house, like, and my cousin just bought a house and I should buy a house. No, you really have to look at your own situation and where you're buying and what's happening in your market and what you can afford.
Because
if anything positive came from the housing crisis, I think it was that breakdown of this myth that you need a home, you need a house to be successful or to be seen as successful. Yeah. No, you just need a positive net worth.
Like, exactly.
You're doing okay.
I got my home. I thought I was so grown and cute. I was like, I'm 25. Condo with a house, condo. Al, check me out. And then a few years later, I'm 25 with a foreclosure, 29 with a foreclosure. It's like grand opening, grand closing. So yes, if I could talk to that Tiffany back then, I had like $40,000 saved. I could have invested and done something different. And yeah, there was just a lot I didn't know. So definitely buying a house is not the cure-all. Anytime you're spending a lot of money, you just want to be mindful that you're adding to your lifestyle and you're adding to your net worth.
Yeah. I'll let you know how it all works out.
Yeah. Like, we're rooting for you. So hopefully, like I said, May 19th is our closing date. Which is we've been through a lot. I'm like, we've been through a lot with this house.
You have. And I'm in that mode where I'm like, something's going to happen.
Don't claim it. You guys have, you're going to have smooth sailing. It's going to be great. Like I told myself, even if the bank doesn't clean out the house like they promised, because that's what we're waiting on now, then the good thing is we have all the paperwork. We'll just close because we've got the closing agent and they have all the paperwork. We could close today. That's the only reason why I feel really confident is that we can close today where we are. But, you know, they promised to clean out the house. And honestly, it'd be a few hundred dollars, if not $1,000 or so plus dollars to rent the dumpster and all that stuff to get rid of all the crap in the house. So I'd much rather be patient and let them take care of it. But they promised a month ago. So this is like their last month to kind of
get it together.
Know. Yeah. And if not, I just told Superman, let's just whatever. If that's what it takes, I mean, we'll just get our friends together to help us out because I just don't want to wait forever, you know?
Oh, one quick thing I didn't mention. I actually, you know, one of the reasons I talked about on the show, it's an early stage. You might be wondering, why is she talking about it out loud? Like, what if something happens? You know, it'll be terrible if it falls through. But I'm kind of like so fascinated by the whole mortgage lending process itself because I've written about it for so long and now I'm living it. And I'm really excited to be able to share some like actual first person experience with this shadiness. Like the one thing I'm excited / nervous about is so we've gotten pre-approved for a loan from different lenders. We chose our lender. You'll be excited. It's Ally. They do mortgages. And their customer service is great. So we've gotten approved. We are in contract, but the lender now is going to do an appraisal. And this is one thing to keep in mind when you're buying in a hot market. So the bidding wars are happening. You know, you're putting in a higher offer. We didn't get into any, you know, a serious bidding war. What was I going to say? Oh, the appraisal. So I was a little bit worried. I'm like, okay, what if the appraisal comes in? You know, the bank wants to know that if they give you this loan, that they will be able to recoup it if something happens, yeah. right? So that's why they do their own appraisal of the property, and they get their own value of the house. And if you're in a hot market, you know, if that appraisal comes in lower than what you've been bidding, there is something written in our contract that gives us an out that we can, you know, leave the table at that point, because the bank isn't going to give us a loan for the amount that we need. You know, we'd have to basically make up the difference in cash. You know, let's say the house we put in mm-hmm. a bid of like $500,000, but the appraisal says it's worth $420,000. Then the bank would be like, we're only going to give you $420,000. So I have to come up with the other $80,000. And I'm, you know, this is a hypothetical, but I ain't going to do that. So I would walk away. But that's, you know, our lawyers, you know, made sure that that clause was in our contract so we can get out. And that's sort of that's the question I have now is what's it going to appraise for? Because if it's not what we're buying it for, I am not.
Mm-mm. Of course. No. Now here's the thing. This is the mistake that I made with a house that we loved in the beginning that what I wish I would have gotten my inspection before the appraisal, because you have to pay for the inspection and the appraisal. And I had them both done on the same day. And I found out that the inspection that day, like our inspector was like, yo, this house is falling apart. And so now if I would have known that, I could have not had the appraisal. The appraisal was like, I don't know, maybe like $900. So I paid for that on a house that if I had just gotten inspected beforehand, I could say, you know what? No appraisal needed. We're not getting this house. So go ahead.
We actually got our inspection the same week our offer was accepted.
Okay. And yeah, because I did it. Yes, the appraisal is not, I mean, the inspection. So, but that's something I didn't realize. I'm like, oh, I should have had the inspection done ahead of time. So just so we don't have to even go through any of this stuff, because if the house wasn't going to, you know, if it didn't pass, I didn't have to spend all this extra money. I ended up spending, honestly, when it was all said and done, it was like over $2,000 in the process to only find out later this house is not, you know, livable, basically. And I was like, oh, it was such, I know, it was such a hard pill to swallow, but it was a good lesson, because there's things you have to pay for along the way. Like, you know, had I known, like I said, I wouldn't have done, but you know, you live and you learn. And I was just like, just mindful for you guys who are thinking about purchasing a property, make sure you get your inspection first and foremost.
And so far I'm finding out all the averages you read on the internets are higher than real life, at least in New York. Like my inspection was $600. But okay. Then once you factor in the pest inspection and this radon test, which to this day, I don't know if, you know, I really needed it or not. We spent $800 on the inspection. I walked, I don't know if you walked through with your inspection person, but we walked the entire house with them, and it was a man and his son, and they were like incredibly thorough. It was like a 2.5 hour, you know, experience. And I felt really good and solid. That's the only, like, I wanted the inspection right away and so fast, because it is an older house. It was built in 1947. And I just wanted peace of mind that we were going to be, you know, not investing into something that was like, you know, falling apart.
Yep.
And then once we had that, then we were like, okay, all systems go, let's do this thing. And the appraisal. Yeah. The appraisal, that's part of your closing costs, down the line. I'm excited / terrified. What they'll find.
No, don't worry. Like, yeah. I mean, if your inspection passed, then if from what I've heard, appraisals usually like are in alignment, you know. That's good though. Keep us informed. I can't wait. Barbecue at your house.
Oh, don't jinx it. But yeah, for sure.
All right. All right. It's time for wins. Hallelujah. It's Wayne and Wins. Hey.
Should we share this one, or do you have...
I would definitely like to share this one.
We can share this one. So if you guys haven't checked your iTunes app lately, you might see some familiar faces. iTunes showing the love to Brown Ambition. Once again, they put us on the Black History Month featured list on the podcast page, which is so exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
So check it out. Well, you're already listening, so you know, you probably saw it or you've already been a fan, but thank you for your support. And thank you to iTunes for the love. Anything you want to add, Tiff?
No, it was just nice to see. I'm just like, wow, it's so weird. Like I say every week, I just feel like I'm just talking to you, Mandy, like, yeah, girl. And then, so it's weird when someone's like, oh my God, I love Broad Ambition. I'm like, that's right. It's recorded and edited and shared. Just because I'm just so like, you know, it just feels like us, like how we would talk if we see each other or hang out or whatever. So it's just dope that, you know, it's like our friendship is, I don't know, interesting. And I just love that. And so,
entertainment, yeah. That's what we are. You and me together, money.
You and me never part. So let's talk about how we can get Ally as a sponsor. We're putting it out there. If you work for Ally, holla.
Shit. Wait, is that some sort? Am I going to get a? I don't want to violate any federal overall laws. I'm not trying to bribe anybody.
No. Like, no, I'm just saying that. No, I'm just saying, like, you know, because I love Ally, you love Ally. Hey.
That's true. We're fans.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just putting it out there. If you know of any other brands that you're a part of, they don't have to be financial brands. If you've heard us talk about something, about our hair, nails, whatever, and you think that would be cute little sponsorship opportunity, definitely hit us up on our website, which is brandambitionpodcast.com.
Got it.
Yeah. And then, you know, because you just never know. You just never know what listeners are listening out there. So you can certainly contact us there and say, hey, my company would love to sponsor an episode or a year or two.
Yes. And thanks to everybody who filled out the listener survey. I'm going to post another link on, you can still check it out on our Facebook page. It's just like 8 or 9 questions really quick for us to get to know you guys better. And I'll post a link on the website as well. So if you haven't filled it out, you still have time. And thank you for the couple hundred people who've already taken part.
Yeah, we love you guys.
Love. Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes. Happy Valentine's.
Galentine's.
With the M. Happy Valentine's.
Oh, got it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.